Hi, everyone. Nice to be with you this week. Welcome to This Week in Mormons. Here we are doing the show with you.
This Week in Mormons. We're Mormon. We're men. We're fresh.
Yeah, we are.
I don't know. We need a tagline, I think.
We have real men, real Mormons, real issues, but we don't really like lean on it very much.
This Week in Mormons. Real issues. The hard-hitting journalism you've come to expect from
two
people that aren't really reporters.
Amateur podcasters.
We aggregate the news so you don't have to in a way that's interesting and relevant.
And far more entertaining than reading any of any competitors' sites. That's right. This is the best place to get your Mormon news and commentary.
We are thought leaders in the world of Mormonism and social issues.
Especially in social. In a world where all of these Mormon sites are all about deep thinking and being very serious about things, which we admit is important, the important study of our faith, only at This Week in Mormons can you come here and just have a good time.
You know, sit back, put your feet up. Why don't you crack open a nice Fresca grapefruit-flavored soda?
Oh, I love Fresca.
Grab a bowl of Cheez-Its. Better get your own bag. And munch away as you listen to This Week in Mormons, your one-stop shop for all things social media.
Everything. We're the best in the world. So, we
world
are.
Champion. We are the world champion podcast.
I believe so. I believe
Judah Friedlander, eat your heart out. We are the world champion.
I really think that we are the best LDS podcast out there. I challenge you to find one better than us.
In a world where sorrows ever will be known.
So now that
we're done
doing our Bill O'Reilly impressions of just, you know, talking about how wonderful our show is, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. Just tremendous. Heck of a week, I tell you.
Was it? I didn't hear much from you this week. Usually we're in more contact. We haven't
keeping my head down, trying to power through.
Yeah.
Lots of work this week. I fly back to New York the end of this next week. And so I've been...
Already?
I was in Salt Lake for a week.
Yeah.
And I got home here to Kansas City for a week.
Yeah.
One more week here, and then I fly back to Kansas City.
Or to New York,
I'm sorry.
And that means I can go to New York. Yes.
That's right. You're welcome to come join me.
Granted, since you don't really live there when you're there, I don't know that I can actually stay with you because you're already doing the sleeping on the floor.
No, you'd actually... Staying with me would be a great solution because I'm never at home. And so you could just sleep on my air mattress.
Well, then what would the fun in that be if I came up to hang out with you in New York and just not ever see you? I don't feel that that would be the most productive way of, you know,
I could give you upwards of an afternoon.
I don't like the sound of that. Oftentimes,
you have no time
for me because you're off dancing on Jimmy Fallon, whining that you don't have time, and you're off goofing around, lollygagging about.
No, so my old missionary companion flew down from Canada, and we hung out this last week, which was great fun. Registered in a corporation.
Oh, typical week for you.
Did some good sales on two of the companies, good design work on another. Like, just a really, really busy week. Like, honestly, one of those weeks where I've been going to bed at 4 or 5 in the morning, popping back up at 7 or 8, cranking away. So, it's a good time.
It sounds like it.
I've been taking a lot of flack, though, man. Like, there's a lot of people that are very bitter. Well, not bitter, but, like, they sympathize with me less and less about my single ordeal.
I agree with them.
I think that's what I'm going to start calling my status in life, the single ordeal. And,
because
you know, I'd love to be married. I'd love to be dating somebody or doing stuff like that. But, like, I honestly... You know, finding time for me to go and lollygag and troll around with women who may be interested and just need to be sold on. I'm like, I ain't got time. And when I say I ain't got time, that's black people talk for I do not have time.
Let's not make this about race.
I was just kidding.
Ain't is used by many people, residents of the Appalachian Mountains, for example.
Oh, good point. That's Arkansas talk for I do not have enough time. And so, I don't know. I've been getting a lot of flack for that since I've been back.
I feel
because people at home know me. It's not good.
Yeah, well, that's justified. You know, you're married to work, my friend, and until you find that balance in your life, when you actually have time to just...
I don't feel like I am, though. Like, any time that there's something worth leaving work for, I'm gone, right? I'm out. I can jump on a plane.
Which apparently is not me. Not me coming to New York. I apparently...
Well, you come to New York, right? Like, we're going to spend... We'll spend a day together. That's great.
It's apparently not worth it. You won't, you know, I don't feel like you care about me enough.
See, that's what women say.
I need you to show me how much you care. You love is a verb, Al. Love.
I'm not going to do you, Jeff.
Is a verb. Okay. Thank you for that. glad to know.
I will not verb you.
You will not, not like Valerie's dad from years ago.
Oh, wait. Yes. What did he do?
I've told people this story for years when I try to give people an idea of Al Doan.
Wait, which story is this?
All right. Quickly then. Okay. Years ago, when you and I barely really knew each other before we did the Ukraine thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I knew you because we'd done our little preparatory blah, blah, blah. And you remember how when we flew over there, we all came from different places, but all of us met up at Dulles before flying to Vienna to go to Ukraine?
Yeah.
Okay, right. So I flew from California to Dulles. Other people, you know, flew from Utah or wherever else, right? And so I arrived with another girl whose name will be... Sarah.
No, Valerie, right. I remember
sure.
Valerie.
Sure, Valerie doesn't find. So Valerie, because we're both flew from the same place. So we roll into the terminal where everyone's waiting around for our flight to Vienna. You're already there. I just knew you as the loud guy who always wore a baseball hat. You know, I didn't like know you very well or anything at that point in time.
And you were the eclectic man who wore Vans-type shoes.
I think that was when I had that awesome slip-on pair that had the white
and
yellow
and
stripes.
And a Kanga and always some sort of a 70s-style jacket.
I do not ever wear Kanga. I wear old man hats.
That's what I mean.
Not Kanga. I'm not Samuel L. Jackson. Okay? So, anyway, we roll into the terminal. Everyone's just kind of getting situated. And you, for reasons beyond me, now that I know you better, I guess I come to expect this. But you're just like, hey, Valerie, I did your dad. For no reason at all. And I was just like, not even that it was like her mom, you know, something going with your sexual orientation. Just
no, that's, I think that's Missouri talk for hello, how are you?
Just
what a pleasure to meet you.
And she was like, not even talking to you. You just like leaned over, you're like, hey, Valerie.
I want to deny it, but that sounds remarkably like me.
It was very much like you. And when people ask me about you sometimes, and that's often a story I use to illustrate.
Well, we were actually just talking about this, how
the essence of you.
I tend to lead out with like over the top kind of an over the top personality,
yes.
And then settle into myself because it gets, I like the extreme reactions.
I'm pretty, you are.
I'm like a shock jock.
Yeah, you are ostentatious all the time, though. I don't, yeah.
It's
okay,
true.
That's not true. When
I don't know why I'm not married. I can't figure it out.
When you really get to know Al, you can have serious, heartfelt conversation with him. That's true.
We do. We have great conversations.
It exists. It does. It does.
I'm a good friend.
So anyway, that's just one of those great memories I have of you.
I'm a witch. I'm a lover. I'm a brother. I'm a hugger. I'm a sinner. I'm a saint.
Are you singing that song?
I do not know.
The B song by Meredith, whatever her name was, from the 90s.
That was a little gift for everyone I've given to you.
Goodness, let's put on some Dishwalla, some Joan Osborne. We're just going to relive.
I get knocked down, but I get up again.
That's Chumbawamba. You're never gonna... That's not Dishwalla.
I don't know.
Dishwalla is the one that says, tell me all your thoughts on God, because I'd really like to meet
her. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, great band.
Hey, so pretty solid week around Mormons. Did you see the Ken Jennings jibber jabber? He lost for all of humanity.
I know that you did not, but I did watch it, and it was terrific. It was hilarious because this computer Watson, the Jeopardy. Oh, sorry, backstory. It was in the news. Most people probably saw it, but IBM produced this crazy computer, and it's a big deal because the whole point of it is to show how to make computers better recognize actual speech patterns in humans, like real communication, because it answered questions based, you know, because Jeopardy questions aren't usually straightforward. Oftentimes they use a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor and, you know.
Answer, this trusted friend was the first non-dairy powdered creamer.
Well, yeah, but even that's like a straightforward question, you know, because oftentimes the categories have a lot of humor and jokes and this and that. And the point was that whether the computer could pick up on that subtlety and answer appropriately. And for the most part, the thing just annihilated everybody. It was just sad. Ken Jennings did reasonably well, though. He held his own. But
did he?
He did okay. I mean, the computer just licked it. They did it by a running total. It was over 3 days. And it was all for charity and stuff. But you could tell Ken Jennings was frustrated. Because really, in the end, Jeopardy's about timing when to buzz in. Because if you buzz in while Alex is reading the question, you get locked out. But if you wait too long, obviously, someone else will get in there. So Ken Jennings, of course, has that down, being the grand champion. But the stinking computer just kept beating him to it.
Being the grand champion. Well, so it's sad because he really lost for all of mankind.
He did.
I mean, we are inferior to the robots now.
We are.
Thanks to Ken Jennings.
And did you see...
I feel like he was our Will Smith on Independence Day. And
yes, or iRobot, for that matter. It's, yeah, we cover the bases. So one thing I did love, though, Ken Jennings, you know, we mentioned him, of course, because he's LDS, everybody, in case you didn't know. And
FYI.
And he put in parentheses after his final Jeopardy answer, which was correct, his answer, but in parentheses he just said, I, for one, welcome our new computer overlords. And like that was his response. And Alex Trebek really broke character and just didn't know what to do with himself. It was outstanding. So...
What did Alex Trebek do?
He just started laughing. He's usually, you know, very formal and laughs and stuff like that. And he kind of had a hard time composing himself after he read that because he thought it was pretty hilarious. Because Ken Jennings is just a silly young man. Who doesn't love him?
I think that's the most accurate description of Ken Jennings I've ever heard.
So, everyone, though, but beware, Skynet is coming. So,
and for those of you LDS listeners out there who don't know what Skynet is, that's a Terminator reference.
It is. Skynet, of course, is the great computer developed by man, but it becomes self-aware and decides to destroy everybody. So, that's what's going to happen.
Where is Sarah Connor?
Watson, the computer, is going to kill us all.
Thanks a lot, Ken Jennings. You really did well.
Well, he did serve his mission in Madrid instead of Barcelona, so we really can't expect...
Are we doing this right now? Are we doing this?
We can't expect good things. I mean, you know, when you're serving the lesser mission of that peninsula...
Jeffrey!
I'm just saying it. Doesn't work in everyone's favor. Anyway. Yeah, so I saw that. It was good times, man. Good job, Ken Jennings. Good week for Mormon things all around, I think.
I think so.
I do, and I was actually looking over, you know, as we peruse things to figure out what content to use on the show. It's kind of funny how this goes around the blogosphere and how things go. So anyway, on By Common Consent, popular Mormon blog site, a guest wrote a post about the King James Bible and essentially questioning whether we should stick with the King James Bible, as if it's archaic, as if the translations, especially that, you know, modern through technology and translation, we realize that many of the translations, what we assume that they mean, might not necessarily even be correct. And the funny thing being that, how do I explain this? That modern translations of the Bible, the ones that take out some of the flowery Old English language of the King James Version, but that more directly say something, the doctrine in that is actually usually matched by the Joseph Smith translation of certain passages as opposed to the original King James Version. So I think that's pretty interesting for one, because it obviously means, you know, it shows the veracity of the Joseph Smith translation of the Bible. But then that being the case, it makes you wonder if these other modern translations that are clearly in line with the Joseph Smith translation, it makes one question whether the King James Version is necessary or whether we should join our Christian brethren in using the New Revised Standard Version or the New International Version of the Bible or whatever they're called.
The Jesus Book.
Yeah. Or whatever, or the New World Translation, like the one that Joseph...
Now, this is interesting, because I've got an institute teacher out in New York that that teaches only out of, like, the new English translation of the Bible. And, like, he makes it a point to kind of ridicule the King James Version at times.
Okay.
You know, he'll read some verse out of Romans or something, and somebody will read it in out of the King James Version. He'll just laugh. Oh, my gosh. How could you get anything out of that? Listen to what it really says. And he'll read it in the new translation, right? Well, and for a long time, like, I don't know. I kind of don't like that. I like my King James Version. I've grown very accustomed to the cryptic text and archaic way of of writing that they've done, I feel a bit of a feat of accomplishment when I can like coherently discuss a scripture out of there, because you, I don't know, like we've been raised on it. A lot of ways, I see that as like the canon for Latter-day Saints, right? Which I think it is, like, right? Like, aren't we kind of bound to that one version that's been quote unquote approved?
Yeah. Can you repeat the question?
I'm saying, are we bound to the King James Version? Like, church-wise, have they done anything where they've said this is the version?
Well, sort of. The funny thing is, in response to this, I don't know how much people picked up on this post by common consent, but then there's an article in the Salt Lake Tribune from a few days later called LDS Sticking with the King James Version. And the funny thing is it goes over actually a little bit of the history of our relationship with the King James Version of the Bible. Because it wasn't like the official Bible of the church for a very long time, actually. And it was even Joseph Smith, of course, had reservations about the King James Version. And that's part of why we have in the Eighth Article of Faith, you know, the caveat of as far as it is translated.
I thought he
correctly.
Just hated Songs of Solomon.
Who doesn't? But anyway, but the funny thing is, it wasn't until, like, I guess there's a symposium that's going to be going on at BYU's Religious Studies Center. And they're actually going to be exploring the church's longstanding connection with the King James Version. That's kind of the main purpose of it. So we'll have to follow that and see what they do. But I guess it wasn't until the 1950s when J. Reuben Clark, who was in the first presidency, really became a fiery advocate of the King James Version. And it was sort of through that and because of its tone and why the King James Version of the Bible. It was only up to then, really, in the 50s, that we kind of just permanently cemented ourselves.
Well, I identify with two angles here. One, like, it would be really, really bizarre, first of all, to move to a new translation, right? Like, that'd be really weird to hear that being read.
It's weird to me when I read them, yeah, because it reads more like straight up prose, you know?
Well, and so, like, so. I think there's value in having the church unified on one version of it, right? And saying, this is the version that we use, which I'm almost certain that's the King James Version, right? When the church gives away a Bible, it gives away a King James Version of the Bible. The part that I identify with this story, though, is that when you translate this into other languages, like, there are a lot of verses that we use to support our doctrine. But, like, you'll be like, here, let me open up to this verse here in Ezekiel. Read that, hotshot. And they're like, this doesn't say anything about what we're talking about. I know in Ukrainian and Russian particular, you know, there's a lot of that where the translations, like, you had to be very careful in what you picked to support an argument that you were trying to make or a point that you were trying to establish, because a lot of times the translation was just out of left field, right? Didn't match it at all.
And I saw the same thing too. I mean, in Spanish, generally the standard accepted by the church is the Reina Valera version of the Bible.
The Reina Valera,
yeah. But remember, we saw this last year in one of our earlier shows, wasn't it, that the church was finally having an official LDS version of the Bible in Spanish, which was a big deal because we spent decades trying to create a proper translation of the Bible for the Spanish-speaking community because, you know, no one else in the world has a quad except for the English-speaking world. But this does open that up for the Spanish-speaking world. So it is a big deal because the church actually...
Wait, did they just adopt that same version?
No, they altered stuff. But a lot of it was based on the Reina Valera version. But the nice thing was that it's able to include, you know, footnotes and cross-referencing with all of the standard works. Because before that, like on my mission, my Spanish-language scriptures, you have the triple, which is what you're typically used to as far as study materials, as far as the way it's organized. But then your Bible is just this totally separate thing. It's not related to anything else. And I also agree with the same thing that oftentimes in different languages, certain passages take on a slightly different meaning, and it is hard. You'd have to pick and choose because it's not reliable. J. Reuben Clark did say the reasons we stick with this one, with the King James one, which comes from 1611, mind you. It's more accepted. It's verified by Joseph Smith. One, I think a fair argument is that it's based on the better original Greek text as opposed to later efforts. And it's literarily superior, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing I do like, though, like you said, I like that, what is it? J. Reuben Clark described newer translations as despicable conspiratorial humanism.
That same thing.
Yeah, right. Reducing the divine status of Jesus and the supernatural dimension of Scripture in general. And in that sense, I like it because I feel like the more archaic language somehow gives Scriptures a better air of reverence, at least for me. And, I mean, I've read other translations and it seems so more normal. It's like, and Jesus walked down the water and he said to his friends, come here, I will talk to you. And he, you know, like it's so straightforward that it almost, I feel like I'm reading a screenplay instead of scripture.
No, it's really bizarre to read through that. I think, have you ever read the Jesus book, the Hawaiian, like the pidgin translation of the Bible?
No. Clue me
in. That is brilliant. I should actually see if I can find an excerpt of it online.
Oh, you should. That'd be terrific.
The Hawaii pigeon vial. The boss above, he take care of me. Je like the sheep farmer take care of his sheeps. He go and give me everything I need. He let me lie down where the sheep sweet, where the sweet and soft grass stay. He lead me by the water where I can rest. He give me new kind life. He lead me in the road. This is a terrible pigeon accent, mode.
No,
he
I lead, love it.
He
I
lead
love
me
it.
In the road that stay right, because I his guy.
That's the best line, because I his guy.
I'll put a link to it if anybody cares to put one of those on the coffee table. I think it's a brilliant move.
I am going to get this.
It was one of my better finds while I was in Hawaii.
That's the best line, because I his guy. Wait a minute, but what is this actually from? How can this actually be the Bible? Because this is from the passage Songs to God 23 verses 1-3. What book is that exactly? Songs to God? I'm not familiar with that one.
I believe this is John.
So Songs to God is John.
Yeah, something like that.
This sounds like Songs to God, and it's from the Jesus book and the Jesus story. What's not to love?
What can I get? So it's who make
anyway. So we're gonna follow this, and of course, if you have any insights as to what goes on at BYU this week regarding this, I think it is a pretty interesting undertaking, and it's an interesting discussion because it's not one we think about much. We just always talk that we love the King James Version because it is one of the oldest. We consider it the purest, but at the same time, if modern translation efforts,
I'm against letting it go. I like my King James Version.
I'm down with it.
Change is bad. You kids, get off my lawn.
But, you know, but then there's the fair argument that if we weren't really gung-ho nutty about the King James Version until the 50s was when we really consolidated our efforts on that, then there's something to say that it wasn't developed with a sense of permanence anyway. But it's what we stick with, so I don't think it'll go anywhere anytime soon. Like, President Monson's not going to show up and say, we're done. Everyone read the Jehovah's Witness version. It's terrific.
It'd be great to have him pull out the Jesus book, though.
Anyway, this was good, but Al, you're about to tell us a story that, it's wrong that it brings me joy, but I love it. I can't help it.
Yeah, this is our favorite title. Woman Dates Nigerian Prince. that's actually not the title. There's a woman who found a man on LDS LinkUp, or as is commonly referred to in Provo, LDS Hookup. The online dating site / social media site. Jeff, you've spent quite a bit of time on the old LinkUp, haven't you?
I have been there back during my especially during my days of Deseret Book employment. It was a great way to kill the time, and
some good Mormon forums and stuff. So I'm sure you've dated a number of women in this category, but this woman was a 39-year-old.
Yes. I've dated many women that I scam for money on LDS LinkUp. What?
And she meets a man named Richard Smart Frisch, a businessman from the United Kingdom. Started having conversations. After a while, he got comfortable enough to ask her for money.
I want to get that comfy with someone online.
Amounts ranging from $5,000 to where does that relationship turn? Right?
How do you take that leap? You're talking about like your kids and what you want to do with your life. By the way, I really need some money.
I've dated a couple of girls for an extended period of time, and I still feel weird like letting them pay for their own food.
Sure.
So getting to that point where you'd be like, hey baby, listen, you're a doll face. You're really nice. What if you covered my tuition this year? I mean, you love me, right? If we're really going where I think we're going, it'll be our money soon anyway.
It's like the new version of trying to violate someone's virtue rather than saying, you know, if you loved me, you would want to be with me intimately. You're going to say, if you loved me, you would give me this money.
It's the businessman's way.
Evidently.
So the amounts range from $5,000 to $10,000 at a time. Reasons varying from business ventures to medical bills. And then, of course, our all-time favorite. One time, he was kidnapped and needed the ransom money. So a year into this, she goes to the police. And what do the police say? Woman, you're an idiot. You're never going to see this money again.
As a side note, I feel bad because she got scammed for $200,000. But if someone living in Britain tells you that they need money for medical bills, that should raise a red flag, because you don't need money for medical bills because they have socialized medicine. Ergo, you should never have to ask for money to do. I mean, you can do privatized stuff there, but this woman clearly was just not thinking straight, because, you know, I mean, what does she think that we're this? Does she think this was America?
Dear Orem women.
I feel bad for her. It's sad. It's really sad. And I also love that I love that it happened on LDS LinkUp. When you first sent me the story, Al, and I saw it was an LDS dating site, I was like, please let it be LinkUp. Please let it be LinkUp. And lo and behold, there it is.
Yeah.
Now, also, if I may say so, you and I share views when it comes to piracy on the internet and stuff, I think.
I believe
correct?
We do.
By the logic of things like the Pirate Bay and taking them down for what they do, should LDS LinkUp not be responsible for what happened to this woman?
No, they absolutely should not.
But shouldn't they? I mean, aren't they the ones who carried the content and created the forum
for
this
not.
To happen?
No, absolutely not.
I'm just saying,
it's
the
woman.
We can sue
it's
the
woman's
Bay.
Fault. If you can't decipher on your own that this guy is scamming you, $200,000 in, like, I would be wary of a, like, of like $100 request from a woman.
Yeah, I know. I'm just, you know, I'm just like playing devil's advocate here. Because,
absolutely not. No,
if something like
a
pirate
no
site is liable, why is LDS
and
like
their terms of
liable?
Service reflect that, right? Like, you're responsible for your own relationships
of course.
You develop on there. So,
I think so. I've never looked at their terms of service, actually. That could be fun. We should try to find them.
Those fools.
We should try to find the terms of service. It'll be like, this is the most wonderful site in the world.
Yes.
Okay, let's look here. LDSLinkUp.com. Frequently asked questions. Okay, is there anything good here? Friends count. Browsing, LinkUp agent, preferences. Come on, get privacy. Was that what we want, I think?
No, there's nothing. There's never anything juicy in the terms of service, Jeff. But anyway, a message to all you. Come on,
bummer.
People. And if you have $200,000 to burn on a potential guy that you've never met, I'd like to date you.
How much does it cost? If anyone wants to give us money, we will start a subscription that costs $25.
To LDS LinkUp?
Yes.
Didn't you know the guys?
One of my friends actually became an employee of LDS LinkUp at one period in time. And he designed the online store. Yes, I know. They created a store for LDS LinkUp. What could you buy at the store, you ask? Which I don't think exists anymore. I wish it did. You could buy, shirts that said LDS LinkUp, because who wouldn't want to wear that around, right? An LDS LinkUp shirt. So fun. That's why I wear a Facebook shirt everywhere I go.
Or a I'm desperate, single, and Mormon / LDS LinkUp. Sure.
Yeah, I felt bad because I know, he was my friend and he worked hard on the site and he was doing his job. But just the content, the site itself was good, but the content, you're like, dude, who is going to buy this stuff? Who is going to buy merchandise? I don't want a sweatshirt that says, agrees with Jed, who was the moderator and owner of the site. Why would you want that? Oh, it's just beyond me. Anyway, don't get scammed by British or Nigerian people.
That's all we're
everybody.
Trying to say.
That's all we're trying to say. Moving right along, we stumbled upon this.
It was magical.
Apparently, we've got like missionaries going to Cuba, which was huge news to me. I'm glad I found this.
What?
Now I've got an entire website full of
LDS
church growth statistics.
What?
Yeah, apparently missionary work is this is as current as this past Saturday. So it says, it says the full-time missionaries serving in the Jamaica Kingston mission, which I'm assuming is over Cuba, a report that Cuba has now come under the administration of that mission. and the mission president has begun visiting Cuba to perform mission business. There is a small branch in Havana, which has been operating for several years. And apparently there is, I think the first LDS missionary to serve from Cuba started his mission recently. And so...
Wow.
It looks like Cuba's opening up, and it might just be like locals or something like that. Because we have like no church in Cuba, which is amazing when you think about it, because it's been closed for so long. That country right there off Florida, nothing. But pretty cool news, I think, man. We get Cuba. I mean, everyone goes to the Dominican Republic and to Puerto Rico and serves missions in all these places, and it might be a long time because of Cuba. We have to have a very big political thaw.
Wait, so what missionaries are allowed to serve in Cuba then? Because it's not...
That's what's still fuzzy. It won't be Americans, obviously. If anything, I think it would be like native Cubans, which kind of gives us a little bit of a catch-22 because we need to have, members there in the first place to have that be the case. But this is all it says. It just says the delays in opening Cuba to LDS missionary activity appear to only be primarily due to reliance on American missionary manpower and leadership rather than government restrictions. But, of course, the problem is the America-Cuba thing. So if we can clear that hurdle, we can get in there. I think for the time being, they'd have to just come from elsewhere, like from Mexico or, other Spanish-speaking nations in the Latino hemisphere.
Tremendous.
That's beautiful. I think that's beautiful news. I love seeing the work go forward in places. The way things are going nowadays, we're going to have stinking missionaries in Cairo in 5 years.
Hey-o. No, I doubt Cairo. Actually, I predict Cairo will be like a world-dominating power in 5 years.
Cairo, just the city itself, not Egypt, just Cairo.
Well, Cairo will be the capital of the country, Egypt.
So on. I don't like to make fun of you. So you think Egypt is going to become a world power?
That would be correct.
I think they're a strong regional power, but I don't know if they'll be a world power.
I bet they do. This is what I'm calling.
Because of their strong export market?
No, because of their corrupt wealth.
Okay. I'm optimistic about the Cuba, about the Egypt thing. Good things happening in the Middle East. Not in Libya. Don't ever go to Libya.
Dude, Libya's rough right now.
Dude, the government's just gunning people down. It's so weird to see the differences based on the regime in question as far as what they put up with and what they can allow. And like I said, it was amazing to watch Egypt, but the only reason the Egypt thing even went down the way it did was because the very powerful and politically involved military just openly said they were going to stand by the sidelines. If the military would have intervened, none of that would have happened in the end in Egypt. So,
sadly, well, and what's crazy is nobody's saying a word, right? Like, I haven't seen Libya at all.
You haven't seen Libya what?
On the news. Sir.
Oh, no. Libya's been in the news quite a bit because, like, today alone they shot, like, 250 people and killed them. The government did.
Yeah, but, like,
in Benghazi.
Compared to the coverage Egypt got?
True. That's very true. I think the hard thing is because it's hard to get sustained protests going on somewhere like that, like in Libya, because they keep gunning people down. Cairo with this groundswell where they just couldn't get rid of it, so... It'll be interesting to see what happens in the end. I know that Libya is on the brink of civil war at this point, which is not good for anybody. So that's totally unrelated to our show. But, hey, you get me going on international affairs and it never stops.
It's true. So in other random Mormon news, this is an article that actually made me sick. I was on the call with Jeff while I was reading it for the first time. Like, this is really, really disturbing to me for some reason. But the father of the five Browns, the piano prodigy family that all went to Juilliard. Yes, Jeff?
Yep. Five siblings, and they all went to Juilliard.
The three daughters were all abused by their father, who was accused of sexual abuse, facing felony charges of sodomy on a child under 14. And, like, the heartbreaker is they've got this picture of the family and the dad right below. It just makes me sick. Like, it's one of the most disturbing things I've seen all week. And that's saying something, because I'm not much for staying away from disturbing things. But, like, so this guy, abused
Keith.
His three daughters,
Keith Brown, yeah.
Confessed to his bishop. The kids all confessed to the police, and now he's going to jail. For 10 years plus, so I
at
looking
least,
at this guy,
yeah.
I hope he goes to jail forever. I think that is a just the most disgusting thing you could possibly come up with to do to a family. So, you schmuck.
It's messed up.
Dude,
the only
that's really messed up, though.
The only saving grace here is that he pled no contest. But other than that,
that's not a saving. That's not a saving grace at all.
You know,
right?
I'm
like
just trying to
fight it all you want. Let the kids take you to jail. You should go to jail forever.
Yeah, it's messed up.
Yeah.
And of course, they haven't talked. I mean, the victims themselves have not, I think, spoken too publicly about any of it. That's just beyond me, man. That's so weird when stuff like this comes out, because it's just like, this is the Five Browns. This group has been around for a while, of these siblings, and all of a sudden, you know,
yeah, like,
I mean, this isn't all of a sudden. We know there's
incredibly
been
talented,
going on,
incredibly accomplished family.
Yeah, it's.
I don't know.
But it's super, super, super jacked up.
Agreed.
And so he will go away for some time, I imagine. I've seen some. I'll spare you the story. I've got another friend of mine who had this whole saga. They're all LDS, and their dad was like the bishop and killed their mom and all. It was just weird stuff goes down.
When stuff like that happens, man, it just rocks you. Like it's not like a testimony rocking. It's like a, you know, these are like good solid people. You look around and you see all the, you know, kind of shiny clean faces at church, and you're just like, man, you know, there's a hidden life for everybody, you know, like it's really, really just kind of a bizarre thing to consider.
Yeah. And that's the best way to put it, I think, what you just said right there. I mean, we all try to be good people, but man, I do not envy bishops at all, because we look around and see our wards, like all our friends and this and that, and they look out on the congregation and see a completely different situation compared to the rest of
but
us.
But to their credit, they see it through an eye of like the Savior, right? Like it's.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Totally. Yeah.
But yeah. Ugh.
Absolutely. But ugh, indeed. And in another, so, well, I know we don't like this subject, so we'll move on. In another bout of ugh, some quick mentions this week. A Latino activist in Utah, right? He's pressing the Mormon church. We talked about this before. Mr. Lopez Vargas, who's urged the church to sign the Utah Compact, a document signed by upwards of 3,300 people who favor a compassionate approach toward illegal immigration. The church has endorsed this, but not signed the compact. So now this guy is presenting a letter signed by 150 people, presents it in person, I believe, to President Felipe Calderon of Mexico, urging him, the Mexican government, to deny visas to American missionaries to go serve missions in Mexico, like as retaliation for the church's lack of
desire. That's the way to do it. That will endear you to church members everywhere.
Yeah. And this goes back and forth. Remember, we talked about this guy, Lopez Vargas, before. But then remember Steven Sandstrom, the conservative one we talked about? We talked about the two LDS members who are on both sides of the immigration question. Yeah, he called it unfortunate, of course, that they're trying to get the Mexican government to interfere in Utah's internal matters. And my views on immigration aside, I believe somewhat in that. I mean, Utah immigration policy is not the subject of the Mexican government to be concerned about. It's just not theirs to deal with.
It's true.
Fight your drug war and don't sit here and listen to these people. I think that's silly.
And
it's your turn, Al. It's your turn.
It's the other big stuff. There was an anti-porn concert.
Those are my favorite.
Two suggestions. One, if you're going to have an anti-porn concert, don't call it an anti-porn concert.
It wasn't. It's called a night of recovery.
Don't call it an anti-porn concert. But I'm curious, what kind of music is played in an anti-porn concert? I feel like it should all be the Tetris levels done in symphonic orchestra.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, I appreciate the gesture of a night of recovery for those dealing with pornography and other addictions.
Do you think it's all David Archuleta?
I don't know. Like, yeah, what music do you play at this? Because, I mean, like, I see the songs being something like that movie, Sons of Provo. Like, really bad, ridiculous songs with singing, like, don't click that mouse, don't do it, don't, you know, like, what are these, if it's clearly a, I just don't understand how you cater and create an event to be about pornography addictions. You know, I don't know. I just, That's the part that I don't get, because
you shouldn't do that. No, exactly. No, you shouldn't do that. Not now.
Or Grandmaster Flash. Don't do it.
Wiggity, 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 wag.
Just the content's the part I don't get. Because I get it when you do benefit concerts and bands play their music and then the money goes to benefit some sort of charity. But pornography recovery or what have you, you don't have just David Archuleta up there singing and then make money off it. And then what do you do with the money? You can't.
Step one.
You can't advocate
anything. Turn off that screen. Right. Step two. Walk away.
It's like step this is like
three.
A Safety Kids album, man.
Step four. I want you even more. Step five. Saved in Christ alive. Step. It'd be like Christian rock. That'd be great.
Yeah. Or it'll be like the moving ballad from The Scorned Wife. Like, why am I not good enough for you?
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Yeah. I mean, we should write our own musical. Forget this Book of Mormon musical that's going on. Let's write our own musical called A Night of Recovery.
Dude, did you ever? Well, of course you've done road shows, man. That's my favorite part about road shows is
the random
Mormon tunes that come out of it. I still remember, like, as a youth, we had some crazy.
On my honor, because you remember last year, you know, I directed the road show in our ward.
Oh, it was a disaster.
And, it turned out pretty okay.
No, I'm just kidding.
But, I mean, it was stressful, but it turned out okay. If I have the chance to do another road show, I'd really want to write one and actually make it somehow about, like, dealing with pornography addiction. But in a comical, zany way, accessible to everyone.
In one of those catchy tunes where, like, you're sitting there at night, and you're like, I should turn off my computer now. Now. Okay, I will.
Yeah, maybe I need to write some original songs. I haven't recorded anything in a while. I'm going to write, it's Mormon rap number two, the anti-porn rap. Porno rap.
Do the porno rap.
We are going to get excommunicated.
Good try, though. I mean, also, yeah. is it a dinner? What does one eat to be anti-pornography?
Oh. I don't know.
I'm just curious how you picked that menu. Is that, like, mainly greens?
I don't think they said there was any dinner involved, was there?
Oh.
No, it's just a...
Hopefully they're selling shirts, though.
It was also at a Seventh-day Adventist church. So the real problem I have with this here is it's being held on a Saturday. Don't you see any problems with this? Seventh-day Adventists? But the event's on a Saturday? How do you reconcile that? Either way, we missed it. It was on this past Saturday. So if any of you happen to go to a night of recovery, your anonymity is secure with us. Please tell us about the event and how it went.
We promise we'll secure it.
Also, in other events, there was a Tibetan prayer thing and an interfaith tribute.
Yeah, whatever.
Song,
anyway.
Women.
There was a drunk guy that broke into a church who gave us the greatest mugshot of the week. That's news.
Yeah. He just rose up through the ranks and quickly rivaled our friend Elder Johnson. I mean, just bam.
Elder Johnson, that picture on this last week's This Week in Mormons post was brilliant, Jeff. Props to you for that. That was great.
Well, thank you.
That man looks like a true criminal.
He does.
The criminal that he is.
But also this guy, Jacob Jeffrey Schwartz, also looks like a criminal. Because he is, because he broke into a Paradise Valley church in Arizona and started messing around with stuff.
He was just smashing things, and then the cops came and got him, and then he got belligerent.
As they often do. I mean, so many... take it from an old pro, people. When you get in trouble for something, be cool about it, and then let the other people get so angry about it that the blame gets pawned off on them. It's worked for me for years. I promise. I used to get my sister into trouble all the time when we were kids this way.
So can we do a listener mail section, Jeff?
Sure. We can do listener mail. Before we do it, though, can I do a few other quick mentions before we do a listener mail section? If you don't mind. Real quick thing, we'll just link to it. There's this thing going on that's been going on for decades called the Critical Text Project, headed by a man named Royal Skousen. And it's all about finding all of the original manuscripts written by Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery and whomever else about the Book of Mormon, seeing the things that they changed, seeing things that were scratched out and altered, and really trying to get to the purest original. Like, when they say original translation of the Book of Mormon, they mean, like, pre even things being scratched out before it was published or anything like that. So I'll spare you a lot of the details here, but we'll link to it, and it's a really, really cool read from Times and Seasons. Just a great thing to read through, and there's tons of pictures showing these things, and it zooms in, shows you all these places where Joseph himself scratched things out,
pretty,
changed
pretty
language.
Interesting stuff. I think that there was a... I'd be curious, too. I think there's a like a DVD series on... Gosh, I want to say... Oh, that the Church History released. Do you remember that? They released like a DVD series a while back that had like high-res images of all these documents and stuff.
Really? Yeah.
But it was some ungodly amount.
Probably. They tend to charge a lot for those things.
But anyway, it's kind of that same thing, right? Where you can just strictly for interest, go take a look. It's cool.
No, I think it's very, very cool, and it's cool to see some of the history of this. And my last one, of course, it's time once again, everybody, for Worthless Stories Out of the Mormon Times.
Worthless Stories Out of the Mormon Times.
What? They've done it again?
Yeah. Icons of Mormon Food. From author Melissa DeMue.
Oh, thank you.
Well, Melissa DeMue. Once again, it's like the same story that we've talked about before. It talks about, like, what are the Mormon foods that we eat? Do they just run out? And this is the second most trending story on the Mormon Times. That's just plain sad to me.
Fools.
Because it shows, like, guess what things we eat, everybody? Guess what? Funeral potatoes. Or we have, like, growing up, like she says, growing up, my mother made Jell-O of some sort to go with nearly every Sunday meal. Sometimes Jell-O had carrot shreds.
I hate her.
Marshmallows. Etc., etc. A frog-eyed salad. It's not bad. And apparently people out of the church also eat this stuff. The main point and issue I have with this silly article is they just put... This is like the same article the Mormon Times has published like four times about just Mormon food that we eat. We get it. We eat funeral potatoes
but
and Jell-O.
I don't ever eat that. You're I haven't had the same person in like 5 years. What
they're terrible
people
for
are
you.
Eating
I think
this
they're delicious,
stuff? And Jell-O? When was the last time you actually had a jiggler, Jeff? Not a jiggler, Jeff. A jiggler.
Is that a metaphor or is that,
what?
Is that a euphemism? So I don't understand. What
when,
means,
when was the last time you dated an obese woman, Jeff? No, that's not a metaphor. A Jell-O jiggler.
It's been a long time because jigglers required a different recipe than traditional Jell-O because they jiggle more.
Oh, this Remember? Is going downhill and fast.
You have to cook jigglers differently. So anyway, point is, we eat all the same food all the time. Oh, she has a blog.
Okay, so anyway, in listener mail this week, I just want to highlight a couple of the comments last week's post or the last couple of posts. One, Robert G, you posted an awesome comment on with all sorts of legal stuff. Could you email that to me if you aren't comfortable posting it? Because it looks like it was deleted or taken down or something happened. And so,
Robert, and this is pertaining to our discussion last week about whether or not one can sue the church civilly. Yeah. And remain in good standing.
I'm just curious.
Anyways, we had this comment, but somehow we were never able to approve it. And whether that's on your end and you wanted it taken down, that's fine. But there was some wonderful information there, and if we could get it back up,
also, there's
that
still
would be
a
awesome.
Lot of follow-up going good. To the story that we've coined as feeling a man's hand on me. A lot of people are still kind of going round and round with that. A couple good comments in the comments section. Kind of along those same lines. And most of the sentiment is...
A lot of...
Listen, she's not the only 30-year-old to ever wish she could have sex that's single and Mormon, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, that sums it up pretty
well. If you're interested in that stuff, it's there.
Also, on last week's episode, really other good comments about singles wards and this and that after we talked about Elder Cook's remarks.
Justin, I'm hoping this is Justin Carrier, who I know, but Justin made a comment on this as well about on YSA wards and winning in family wards. The more, like, so I'm back home this week, and I went to my singles ward from home instead of my family ward, and it was one of those that I'm like, I could really see the value in, you know, there being like a well-established functioning YSA program here and not a YSA ward. Because I go to the ward and I sat through an hour of sacrament meeting, an hour of Sunday school, an hour of priesthood, and then went home. And there's like, it's like going to a movie with a date, right? Like you don't get to know them, you don't get to know them at all. And so putting more emphasis on like the weekday activities, I don't know. I'm kind of digging on it. I think it might, like, I think it'd be an interesting, at least an interesting scenario to try, right? I like the idea.
Maybe.
I like it more and more. But you, Jeff, you were just telling me that out in D.C., they're not getting rid of him at all.
Well, no, and that's the funny thing. And I wrote this guy, you know, Justin, to this, and I responded to Justin's comments because I get where all of you are coming from and this and that. But Justin had some good thoughts. I do agree. That was some interesting stuff. But I think the biggest problem is that the bottom line is YSA get lost in the cracks when they're in family wards. Because YSA programs within a stake and a ward just don't function. Even if they should, ideally, the bottom line is they just don't. And if we're being realistic about stuff, it's lame because we kind of have to coddle YSA to keep them active and keep them involved, basically, which is sad. Ideally, we wouldn't need to do that. It's true. And I think, you know, in a perfect world, everyone would kind of buck up and go to church for the right reasons, make it happen, you know, feel the spirit, do this and that, and then have events and activities and meet people and la-ti-da. But because we have to deal with the reality of things at this stage in, of the game, I think it's important to have singles wards because it gives a very direct, clear social group and area where people can participate and be with their peers. And this is the most at-risk demographic in the church for going inactive. So I'm fine with doing whatever it takes to keep people in church. You know what I mean? So, because I know. And anyways, like you were saying about what we're doing. Yeah, we are, they're building an entire new chapel just for the singles wards in my stake. My stake has 3 singles wards in it out here. And they bought an old office building in Crystal City. And they're converting it into like a chapel, more kind of like an urban style thing, like a 3-level whatever. And it should be interesting. We're supposed to move there next month. Details are pending. But, yeah, so clearly knows they're giving us our own building. The problem out here is they have more wards than the buildings can handle. You have a lot of buildings with 4 wards meeting in them. And so they need to ease that burden a bit.
Well, I don't know what's right or, you know, like if it's the right way or what. But, like, I'm beginning to get to the point. Like, in my early 20s as a 21-year-old fresh home from the mission, and you have this vision of the singles ward as, like, this sort of walk through the aisles and select your future wife. I mean, it's a very kind of exotic, exciting thing to go to a singles ward where everyone there is single and they're doing their thing. But as it comes back to living the gospel and just kind of being, I guess, a member of a congregation, more so than the dating prospects, there's a lot of value in the family ward, I think. So, I don't know.
I agree. But I think the problem is the YSA get lost. They get lost and they get forgotten.
They totally do. And there's nothing more lame, I guess, than having, you know, than being in a singles ward. Well, and somebody mentioned this in our comments. I'll see if I can find it. Just how, yeah, Lara, I don't know. But she said,
you know who
the
you
dilemma
are.
Of bishops and branch presidents that takes bodies away from callings. In her years in the family branch, she's never received a more intensive calling than chorister or primary teacher. I think every YSA person in a family ward can relate to that, right? Like, it always feels like throwaway jobs. You be
exactly
hymn book collector and sacrament preparer.
And I think part of that's the benefit, because, I mean, I can't speak for Revelation, I'm not going to, you know, from a bishop, but say you're in a family ward and you're a single guy. And there's a regular family ward. What are the chances that you're going to be the one called as an elders quorum president? I just think realistically, they just don't think to put an unmarried, you know, a YSA in a position like that. Whereas when you're in a singles ward, it gives leadership opportunities to young single adults who otherwise probably wouldn't have them. And it's, you know, it's not to say bad things about the leadership in family wards, but oftentimes, you know, I just don't think that mindset is there to let YSA take on leadership roles when they're in a family ward, because they're just like this separate little group. They're like pariahs. They're just this little thing. I think that's one of the most valuable things. You know, I mean, it all depends on the size of the ward, but if I were to go back to my family ward today as a single person, you know, back in California, they wouldn't have me teach gospel doctrine. They would have all these other old dudes who have been there forever teach gospel doctrine. I've been in a singles ward and I've been able to teach gospel doctrine for years, and I love it, and it's a great opportunity for me. So Totally.
Also in listener mail, we have two posts from Anonymous.
I forgot.
One post, which leaves us with a strong inclination. Well, no, we know it's not. Well, so the post came from Columbus, Ohio. We did a little background checking on them. And the reply to the comment on the Mormon Bachelorette clip where Jane and Rick Buck are making out off of camera. And Stretch says, oh, the filthy, making out off camera, and was followed by an I'm sorry by Rick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She responds, maybe he bit her lip, which...
What?
I suspect may be from somebody in the know. I hope it is. That sounds tremendous. And then, using a different email address, she replies, as it should have been Jane in the end, not Melanie. I was disappointed, to say the least. But these posts from Columbus.
Are you telling me...
Maybe it's Melanie's own people. Perhaps.
So that's what we're... This is what we are... Yes, yes.
Perhaps she's... She is not happy with the Rick's selection and wishes that it would have been Jane. And she is having her own people stating this.
Yes, because we appreciate your comments, but even when you use a separate email address, we still know it came from the same person.
Yeah, well, definitely love the comments. keep throwing them. But I'm Anon, who are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway.
Who you is.
That's a good time. That's all for my listener mail stuff I wanted to bring up. Just a couple of great comments. You guys are getting better and better.
Yeah, we love the comments. I think that's one of the greatest things I've seen as the longer we've done the show, is we get more interaction and comments from the people, and I love it. I love being able to moderate the boards and talk with people and stuff. It's fun.
Good work, you people.
Good work. I think we're going to be done for the day.
Sounds good.
Yes. So, everyone, you wonderful, sexy people, have a terrific week. Glad to be with you. Thanks for listening in.
Do what you do.
And find us at the places where you find us. Email us, contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. Tell your friends, like us, in quotes, like. And Twitter, @TheRealTwim. Many of you know the drill, but if you didn't know these things, this is where you find us. Be in touch with us. We'll be in touch with you. And together, we can all feel a man's hand on us.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's a good note to go out on. All right, buddy.
All right, man. See you later, brother.
You are so distracted right now. Have fun doing whatever you're doing.
I thought we were done. I'm sorry. I was trying to be quiet.
And all right. Anyways, later, Al. Thanks for listening, everybody. Always appreciate it. And your comments, questions, everything else, always welcome. And tell your friends about This Week in Mormons. We're the best ever, basically. That's going to be it. So it's been another edition of TWIM. Have a good week. Bye, folks.
You look at me with uncertainty. You look at me with urgency. You look at me with fear in your eyes, like you're about fall away. Don't be afraid to change your colors now. I've known you all summer, you rose above it all. I see you hesitate to fall now, but it's a pretty good view from down here. Try not to think, and I will try.